Hello, everybody. It's Marcy from wavesofcommunication.com. Welcome to another episode of the Language Facilitation Helpline podcast, and thank you for tuning in today. Every action you take to help the late talkers in your life is important. That the fastest results come when you enjoy the process of language facilitation. Parents, caregivers, and therapists worldwide have proven that when they connect and enjoy the process of spoken language, it emerges naturally. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Waves of Communication platform for another spotlight interview. And today I have a parent, a language facilitation super parent. I'm just going to call her out right now. And Jenna has four kids who are late talking, and she homeschools, and she has managed to get her kids from nonverbal communication into at least some level of spoken language. Welcome, Jenna.
Oh my goodness. Well, I have an amazing family. I have four little boys. They are almost 9, 7, 5, and 3. So that's a handful on its own. And then all of them are late talking. We live in Alaska, which is amazing. So I recommend it. My degree is in music. So I teach music lessons. And so that allows me a lot of free time to be home. And I homeschool my kids. My husband does other things, but it's mostly on me being at home with the boys.
And that's pretty typical of a lot of parents, especially those who take on this journey. The one person, it doesn't have to be the mom. Sometimes it's the dad. One person goes and makes sure that the family has what they need as far as resources. And the mom stays home and makes sure those resources go to work and work out for the family. Okay, so it's you and these four boys home all day. And tell me a little bit about, now they were all late talking and you've got one that's nearly nine. Mm-hmm. How did you, in Alaska, how did you find resources? What did you do when you realized that your kids were late talking?
Well, I want to say it's a typical path, but you know, you're searching on the internet and you realize that your kids probably got some autism. This is probably about 18 months too, right? He's got some red flags for autism and all the signs pop up, right? All the websites start to scare you. Sorry, I got mascara running. Oh, I'm just going to cry. I'm going to cry. Early intervention in Alaska. So they come out and they do an assessment and they, I don't want to be too negative right away, but they get you in the system just right away, right? They suck you in and they start telling you all the things that you need to do to fix your child. And you just get funneled.
They tell you at that evaluation that your child is broken in some way, that there's something that's wrong.
And as a first-time parent, especially with your old, well, for any parent, right? But as a first-time parent, you're like, oh my goodness. And I need to do everything I can to give my kiddo what they need. And so we just got sucked into a system of lots of evaluations and therapies and IEP meetings. And and how it changed the way I looked at my kid was really hard. You start to like just be very negative about how his life is going to turn out. And it's not. And I'm just so looking back at 18 months old, how he was, I didn't need to put that on him, that he was a good kid. And I didn't need to mourn his life when he was 18 months old. He was going to do amazing things, and I didn't know that.
Now, before you met with the early intervention folks, had you been interacting with your son differently than after you had that evaluation?
Not until I kind of read a website that had all the autism red flags. I'm like, oh my goodness. And then, you know, it was like, oh. No, I don't think I was interacting with him differently, but it was just coming to terms with, I might have a child who has some different needs.
Well, you know, you had your nine-year-old, and then for 3 years, you dealt with the system, and then you had a baby. Then you had a baby. And then things focused probably on the new baby, and your other son was in the system, some kind of preschool somewhere or something like that. And then he was in, you know, obviously you couldn't focus as much on him. You had to focus on the new baby a little bit, at least. I mean, you got a new baby. It is what it is. And you've already had a system of people saying, hand your kid over. We'll help him in these therapies. We'll put him in the preschool, you know, all of that stuff. And so then what happened with your child number two? What did you think is the root of his late talking? What do you think is the
problem? Oh my goodness. I don't know. I feel like there's probably something neurologically going on with all of my kids, right? There's something I don't want to, I'm really kind of resistant to the whole autism label. We have not got official diagnoses and I don't want to put that on them. I love that you told me that I didn't need one. And I'm just like, okay, I don't need it. I'm getting all the services that I want and I don't need to put labels on him. And I had teachers telling me I need respite care and disability and I'm going to put them on Social Security. And no, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't,
right. And I think that's it, because with the label comes the package of service, you know, like if you get, and even though it's a spectrum and every child's on one end or the other, and remember, it wasn't even called a spectrum disorder until very recently in history. Before that, it was funny looking kids that did things a little bit differently, and we just help them figure out how they, as unique beings, I don't want to say funny looking because that's what red flags are.
Yeah.
Is when kids look different than neurotypical or whatever, that's what happens. All right. So child number two, at what age did you sort of start to feel like you were looking at another late talker?
Well, I knew he was late talking because at about two or three, he wasn't talking, but he seemed like a normal toddler to me. He was just curious and interactive and bouncing off the walls. He was wild. He was so smart. He is hyperlexic. He taught himself to read right after he turned two. And we just thought he was just this bright little boy and he was just going to talk when he wanted to talk. And I knew he was late talking, so I knew he would qualify for speech services. And so we just put him on the bus with his brother. And it wasn't until he was almost five that I went to an IEP meeting and I said, so why do you think that Elliot's not, you know, talking as much as you? And they just said, well, he definitely has autism. And the speech therapist just like laid that on me. It's like, I think you need to get him diagnosed. And I just had no thought in my mind until he was almost five that someone might think he was autistic. And because we just treated him normally. We thought he was a normal kid. We just thought he was just slow to talk.
What I think is so interesting about that experience for you is, here is a meeting that you showed up to with questions about, why has my child been in school for this long and I don't know what is the root of the problem, why he's working on what he's working on, why he isn't talking. Nobody's had any conversations with me, you know, in that all that period of time. That's why you have these IEP meetings. And you showed up and these people snowballed you, tsunamied you with, your child's got this and you need to, which means that they had been thinking about this for at least some period of time and plan to snowball you with this information without considering what that might, without talking to you before. And this is where the separation between therapists and parents happens, that really makes therapy a waste of time and school a waste of time for people. And I think that's what you figured out, right?
Yeah, that was a terrible meeting and that changed my entire life, right? I had at that time two other kids, right? Two younger boys. And I knew that my third son had been, you know, walking around flapping. And so,
you do what you see, and you've got two older brothers who communicate this way, because we haven't even talked about what you've been doing at home. I mean, this is just what you had to deal with your environment, looking for help. You were just looking for help.
Yeah. And I had, oh my goodness. So, and this is at this time of this IEP meeting with my second son, I had already pulled my first son out of school. He had gone to first grade. They put him in a mainstream classroom. And he was nonverbal. He was not talking. He'd come home and was, Emerson, how was your day? And, you know, he couldn't say anything. And he would just regress. And he would go sit in the corner of his room. And he would just, like, stare at the wall and stim. And it was just terrible. And he would cry when he'd get on the bus. And we didn't know what was going on. I tried to talk to the teachers. I tried to go in and spend a day at the school. I remember I spent half an hour in his first grade classroom. And then his first grade teacher came to me, put her hands on my shoulders and said, okay, I'm going to have you leave now. And before I even knew what happened, she just like managed me like a six-year-old out of the room. And I'm like standing outside the door in tears. Like, I can't believe she got me out of the room. And then I couldn't go back in and say, you just like told me,
give me my kid.
And she didn't do it in a mean way. She, yeah, and I was like, I have, he's in.
Wait, hold on. Time out. I get she didn't do it in a mean way, but listen, I need to give you some credit for, listen, that was not a kind thing.
No.
It wasn't mean, but it wasn't kind. Mm-mm. And it did not consider your, first of all, your role as this child's mom, but even your role as this child's assistant to the teacher who has been charged with teaching them. The first thing you're going to want to do is learn what anybody else has been doing with that child before and help them transition easily. But this teacher had in her own mind, this is how I do things. And, and I believe that's why your son was crying, because they feel just like you feel the rip of separation when someone physically separates you from your child and puts them in a potentially volatile, you don't know what's going to happen. It's the first day of school.
Well, it wasn't the first day. It had been about the first week or so though. And he'd first come home with so much anxiety and I just didn't know what was going on. I'm like, I'm going to take my day. I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do with my other three boys. I'm going to go spend some day at school and figure out what's wrong with him. And I didn't get half an hour in the day before she like managed me out of her classroom. And I'm like, we need to know he's going to come home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what happened? So I just want other parents to learn from this. And while we talk about it was a terrible situation, and thank you, Jenna, for being so brave to share this in real life, the real tragedy that happened to you, because I know it happens to other parents, and I know, and I just want to empower you. You don't need to do anything that anyone says you, and if this ever happens to you, and I know that Jenna is looking back saying coulda, shoulda, woulda, but I'm giving you permission, and so is Jenna, to open that door and take your kid home.
When all the therapists are saying, you're making a mistake, your kid has all these issues, list, we can help him with all of this, and you're making
them, you felt it in your gut. If it makes you cry,
everything makes me cry.
If it makes you cry, stop. It's okay to stop. It's better to do nothing than something that's going to traumatize you and your family.
You already have this broken child, and the therapists are going to fix it. And they have all this funding and this, and they've got all this stuff that they have to do to fix your child, and they've got this whole, their world is built around all of these broken children that they're gonna fix. I didn't even mention that my five-year-old, he got assessed by the school psychologist without my permission, and they told me he was severely autistic, which came as like a shock to me, right? First that they assessed him, and second that he was severely autistic, because he was this bright, happy kid. You know, he wasn't not engaging with me, and he wasn't talking. He had some red flags, but I would not have called him even severely. You know, maybe he was on the spectrum, but I wouldn't have called him severely. And I was
that's not a valid diagnosis. First of all, without permission, it's illegal. Yeah. And without your input, it is invalid, because when you look at the DSM criteria for these things, it must include lengthy. They'll show you how to work their numbers. Like you said, they know what they know and they do what they do. But it takes a super brave mom to go up against literally that tsunami of, you know, they bombard you with it. And I'm not sure where all the motivation comes from, if it's financial, if it's personal, if it's whatever, but it doesn't matter to you. It's theirs. That's what you figured out, Jenna. It's them. And then what happened? So how did you figure out what to do?
It's around Christmas time. I had an almost 7-year-old, my second son, Elliot. He was completely nonverbal. He would, verbally stim, kind of walking around doing that. So parents are right, want to know what I'm talking about.
And how did they communicate wants and needs, your kids?
By this time, Emerson was talking, my oldest was able to express his wants and needs, but my almost 7-year-old was just extremely frustrated, and he would just, he didn't really at all. He was.
So you pretty much had to anticipate everything. He wasn't even nonverbally. telling you.
Yeah, he wasn't in his own world so much, but he was participating in the world, but he wasn't really communicating much of anything.
Yeah, and, yeah, sort of going with the flow, and you know, probably very prompt dependent from that first situation, because when they start out prompting from the very beginning, the kids learn, okay, if I do what they say, they'll be happy with me. They won't yell at me. They won't take away my favorite things if I do what they say. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what that woman tried to do with you, you see. If you just kindly go out of the room, mommy, I'll take care of this myself, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. But I mean, like, doing that to my son, right? You know, I was. And he would wake up in the middle of the night just crying and being inconsolable. And I had no idea what was wrong.
Yeah. Right?
And he was just so frustrated with his life. Anyway, the good news.
You hit the wall. I mean, it was tough for you. You hit the point where nothing was working. Everything was breaking down. It was whatever. And you turned to the internet?
Well, it wasn't even that. I mean, I'd been living in this life for quite some time. It wasn't even that I'd hit a wall. It was like this was the life that I had to manage. And I was homeschooling my kids. And homeschooling, right? They couldn't do much. I wasn't able to talk to them, right? So we're just trying to keep them occupied most of the time during the day. And so somehow I found you on a podcast that a special needs homeschool something. I don't even know what it was. Okay.
Okay, great.
And just something, I was like, whoa, this lady, she's got something to say. And so I downloaded your audiobook just immediately that day, and I just consumed as much content as I could. And I didn't tell my husband, right, because he'd been very, oh, we're doing this again, he's overwhelmed with everything. Anyway, and I started giving a lot of extra attention to my second son, Elliot, who was almost 7 and not talking. He wasn't even using echolalia, like there were no words coming out of him. And he had talked. Before we had sent him to preschool, he was starting to talk. And that was the really hard thing, is because as soon as we sent him on the bus at 3 years old to preschool, he just regressed completely into himself. And then at 5, we had all these speech therapists telling, you need to get him diagnosed. Even though I didn't see the red flags aside from the late talking, I didn't see anything from him.
Right.
But anyway, point of being
after good. After the audio book, you just started talking more. What did you change?
Oh my gosh. Well, I started realizing a lot of the things that I was doing wrong. Firstly, that our house was very, very quiet because I had a bunch of kids that didn't talk. And that, so, I mean, and I'm home with them. Nobody talks to me. So I've got headphones in. I'm listening to audiobooks and podcasts. And our home was just very, very quiet. So I wasn't even talking to my kids. And that's part of what I think about people telling me, your kid's got these issues, deal with it. And so I'm like, well, I have autistic children. They're not going to talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all of the, not only did they pull back, but I just let them pull back.
Yeah, so we talked about two blockages in one little scenario here. Both environmental, quiet environment, kids not hearing anything but technology, and you not hearing anything but technology. Now, you were learning from your technology, and so were they in their own way. They were learning, but it wasn't a connected learning. Now you took off the headphones and started to connect. What a great thing. So the environmental thing. And then again, you didn't feel like it was even important. Mindset block, right? You didn't even feel like it was important to provide human talking because they were listening to technology. So were you, and they were learning. But you didn't realize that it wasn't connected learning. And that is the secret. It's the zone. It's the language facilitation zone. Awesome.
My third son, he spent about a year in his own little world, and part of the heartbreak for me with him is that I just let him go, right? Mm-hmm. I saw him just like pull into himself, and I remember there would be days he would just walk around and not talk to me, right? He would just do his own thing. I'm like, I would try to get his attention, I would try to talk to him, I'd try to interact with him, and he just wouldn't. And I was just, and I would just cry. I would just feel so helpless looking at that and not knowing it was my job to pull him out. And I know that now, and I have, but I don't want anybody else to think that, you know, you just let your kid go. You don't. You fight for them, and you just play with them, and you talk. It's so simple. I feel like this is stuff that people used to know how to do, that you play with your kid, you interact with them. If they're feeling, you just
Keep it easier. Don't get complex. I think that's the other thing. People think that they've got to get the entire auto car set and set it all up and make these perfect environments. It literally is just showing your kid how to turn the page.
Yes.
And turn the page and turn the page. If they like flipping, if they like spinning, if they like dancing, if they like jumping, if they like flapping, you let them watch things fall and just watch things fall together with them.
Yes.
Just connect on the very, very basic. Keep it easy. And then they show you how to get it more complex, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And nothing is lost. Even if it doesn't work, you're building a connection with your kids.
Exactly. Because what they remember, they've been learning. These are not, I know that they feel like they've been in their own world, but they've been with technology. They've seen other people. They've spent time at preschools and stuff, but they just can't demonstrate what they know until you connect with them and then you see, and then it literally radiates out of them before it's verbal. You see it in their behavior. And then you, when you take the initiative to be the facilitator, you turn all that connection and stuff you see into language models. And that's what you did, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Back to my second son, Elliot. Sorry.
Yeah.
I know. I've got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't tell my husband because he was just being very negative. Well, not negative. I don't want to cast it like that.
Done. I mean, like I said, everybody just gets so done with there is nothing we can do. So this is our life. And, you know, it takes a spark to it. Sometimes it takes the biggest frustration ever or whatever for you to make a change like that. And so, like I said, tell me what you started with. How did you start?
Sitting with him and just talking to him and listening to him, which seems really strange. I have a busy life with a lot of kids. And so I would put everybody to bed and I would just sit with him and I would realize that he would talk to me. He would like say little things and I just really had to listen because he had no confidence in what he was saying. He was almost seven and he had no confidence in using his voice. And so I would just listen to him and I would talk to him and eventually he would start grabbing my hand and pulling me towards the snack cabinet. Right. And that was huge. That was that first little like, mom can help me with this. And so, And anyway, so we were just getting along really, really well, the two of us. And I was just really encouraged that he was just coming out and he was like, I was just getting to know him, even though he wasn't talking, I was getting to know him. And your protocols say 3 to 6 weeks of like consistent work. And I was like, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to keep going. And it was.
What do you got to lose? 3 to 6 weeks, right? Everything else, I'm going to, you know, you can, because even without your husband, and I think this is a really common thing where parents are literally, they find this platform. It's just a YouTube channel. It's just, it's all I got to do. I don't have to buy anything. I mean, you, the book or whatever. I just got to try this.
I have to sit and talk to my kid for hours a day that people used to do all day. Moms used to be home with their kids all day and they would play
with
their kids.
Way.
Oh my gosh. What the heck happened?
About I'm doing dishes now because there was nothing else for them to look at.
No.
Dishes.
Anyway, so it took Elliot the full 6 weeks and it was a lot discouraging, right? I was putting in a lot of it. It wasn't discouraging in that, I mean, there were a lot of benefits and he was blossoming in a lot of ways, but he still wasn't talking. And then it was just, the echolalia started. He started repeating me and he just started talking. And now he's really, really great about all his wants and needs, right? He's very bossy and he does, you know, he tells me one exclamatory sentence that he wants cookie, banana, you know, those sort of things. And it's amazing. It's huge that he's able to tell me random things.
What kind of period of time, Christmas till now, and we're talking in June.
Yeah.
So 6 months of, you know, the first 6 weeks, you got words and real words that meant requests from a kid who required other people to anticipate his needs. He wasn't even non-verbally expressing his needs.
Yeah.
In 6 weeks of intensive language facilitation, the requirement is 2 to 3 hours a day of talking with, to, around, about, all of those things with your lay talker. And because it takes, and that's why that frustration happens at week 2 to 3 to 4. You're going, is this really gonna work? But what keeps you there is the fact that he keeps showing up.
Yep.
He keeps showing up. If you keep showing up, they keep showing up. And that's why, even though you're like, is this even working? You think about, it's better. It's better. And mm-hmm. she said 3 to 6 weeks. I got to keep going 3 to 6 weeks. So, and you put yourself in that boot camp mode, right? Mm-hmm. And you get through the ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. And you realize that this is what it takes, because what you learn in that first six weeks is what does it take? What works? What doesn't? What did I do over and over again? And I'm like, oh, that didn't work, because it's all trial and error. And what did I do that got immediate response? How can I double down on that? How can I iterate that? How can I change that? It's the perfect homeschool mom mindset, right? Where you're like, oh, that trip to the park, I was able to get science and math and English and reading and all that stuff done in one trip to the park, as long as I document it properly and I make sure that the kids are learning those things, because you as the teacher and or facilitator are responsible for creating the agenda. So after the first 6 weeks, you don't have much opportunity to create an agenda, because you're just like, let me see what happens. What if I try this? What if I try this? But after 6 weeks, you know a lot, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And you're so much more bonded with your kid. It's it's remarkable. Try. If anybody's listening, just try. Just sit with your kid and just play with them. And
they
bond
fast. Remember, they've been waiting for this. They've been waiting for this since they were 18 months. And you got distracted by the systemic way of working with lay talkers. And it's not uncommon. It's so common. I left it myself because as a systemic speech therapist, there was nowhere I could work, a school, a hospital, a private clinic, a public clinic, even with parents working in their home who wanted me to work with their children. They had the same expectations. I want you to come and fix my kids. Something's broken. I'm paying you money. Fix my kid. And you know that when, even if you don't pay money, if it's your insurance or your school or your whatever, you have to take them there. You have to let them, you give up the responsibility and opportunity. And Jenna figured it out. Jenna figured it out just from sitting 2 to 3 hours a day. And it didn't happen in 2 to 3 hour blocks, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, it started probably very limited. And probably your son started to be like, what? He was like, who are you? Like, how did he change when you changed?
He just... he came alive. He like started to interact with his family. He started to understand he was part of this family and he wasn't trapped. He could be part of our family. He had something to say, and he would, oh my goodness, he's completely come alive. It's all so right. cool and, to get to, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I want to hear what's so cool.
It's just getting to know him. And as happened with my older son, he will tell me things that happened years ago. And it just like, oh, so, you know, yeah, my older son, he's almost 9 now. And I remember just recently I said, so what, do you want to go to school? You know, just kind of joking around with him. Do you want to go to school? And he said, no, there are too many people there. And this is from a kid who didn't talk. And now he's telling me, no, I didn't like school because there were too many people there. Anyway, so my 6-year-old, who was completely not request movies that he watched 3 or 4 years ago, right? He comes up and he tells me he wants to watch Lion King. And we haven't watched Lion King since he was little. And I'm like, we can absolutely watch Lion King. Have you been thinking about that for 4 years, that you want to watch Lion King? And so, yeah, I know, right?
I know, and you're like, so, what a blessing. You have opened their world. So now, and guess what? You're just getting started.
I know.
You're just getting started. Now it gets more fun because you've already gotten your kids in the workbook. Are you working with the workbook?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody buy Marcy's workbook. Absolutely. And one of the big takeaways from that was that my oldest son was talking, and you had that big continuum, right? He was really good at his wants and needs. And I was like, oh, he's on his way. My work is done, right? We're only halfway done. Yeah. So I didn't even think about needing to do a lot more facilitation with my older kid who had been talking. Yeah. The workbook. It's great. It's great.
Yeah. And so not just your older son. So that's what also is amazing about this. Like I said, you're just getting started. I mean, language facilitation happens our whole entire lives. And so the great thing about the workbook and the strategies that, you know, even that I talk about, the combination of the workbook with the YouTube channel, that's usually what I recommend for people. And then, you know, you can keep coming in. Have you been coming to ask questions on YouTube?
No, I haven't asked any questions, but I come. It's where I'm in Alaska. It's a little early.
Oh, yeah. I get it.
Yes, but I do catch a lot of them on replay.
Yeah. And so, again, most people watch the stuff on replay. They're evergreen. And you can keyword search and find the ones you want. But the workbook also helps you look at each one of your kids individually and rate them where they are. And then the strategies are there to help you move them up. So that's why I'm glad you talked about it. But then let's talk just a little bit about, so now where you're older, your 9-year-old is probably at in level 4, moving to level 5, this I want why, they're talking about why and that kind of stuff. Now remember, level 5 is very broad and level 4 is very, very broad, because level 4 goes all the way from cookie to I want a chocolate cookie that we made last week and I want it warm at 180 degrees. I mean, it can be that specific and it's still only level 4. Right. And that's why your older son talked a lot. And you were like, look at all this. This is really good. But it wasn't as, it was still sort of descriptive and general and not very whatever. But I think what triggers the kids to move up always is the stories and telling the stories. And that's why they remember. And even though you didn't tell the story of 2 years ago when they watched Lion King, because you've told other stories of even what happened this morning, you know what I mean? They know, hey, I can think back. You're teaching them how to learn, how to look back on their life and remember the good, the bad, and the ugly, and use it moving forward. That's how language development happens. So it sounds like you're great. And then now the younger ones, how are they now? Neither of them were talking, just in the way that you've been talking with your older boys. Have they picked it up just watching you interact?
Oh yeah. My third son, like I said, I didn't talk to him for like a year. I have these autistic kids who I'm just not going to interact with. We're going to be on disability and they're going to live at home forever. And now I have this toddler who's just like, he's not very verbal, but he's so interactive and he so wants to be part of our family. And so, and I know how to help him now. And I didn't know how to help him before. You know, we go to therapy twice a week and I would say, you know, I put all my hopes in, hopefully you magic person can help my child. And now I'm like, we'll go home and we'll play.
Yeah. So, and then how old are the two youngest?
3 and 5.
3 and 5. Yeah. So those guys, are they using needs-based language? Kind of, sort of. So are they using nonverbal needs-based, dragging you, pointing, that kind of stuff yet? Okay. Yeah. So they're just getting ready to get up over that line into the spoken language work. And so my recommendation always for families like yours is, especially this summer, you're going to be able to get out. You're going to be able to get a lot of light, a lot of daylight where you live. So you're going to have these nice long days where you're going to get out, like I said, at the park. And you're going to have to think about, instead of how am I going to teach math, English, reading, and science, how am I going to facilitate basics and storytelling and details of requests without prompting these kids to do this, 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 and this. And the way you do it is you put on your tour guide hat and you just kind of rally them together, just like you do with your homeschool things. And remember, if you're all together as a group and your energy is focused really securely on one, the other ones are watching and they see and they learn, oh, when I talk to that one of the four, I've got to use this kind of language. And when I talk to this one, I've got to talk like that. And when I talk to this one, and they each learn from you. So they all become part of, you know, because they can relate to each other. They were all late talkers. I know what it felt like, you know, especially your 9-year-old. Yeah. He knows what it feels like to be 4 and know exactly what kind of dinosaur I want to pick when I go to the dinosaur place. They know, and they don't know how to say it, but they know how to get people. See, so what they're going to start doing is they're going to be prompting you. Tell me about this. 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 So you're in the perfect position. You have established yourself. Doesn't matter if you're established to the world. I think you have to the world. But what matters most is you've established to those 4 boys that you are the source of their spoken language, and you got good ideas that relate to what they like, and you won't pressure them or push them like anybody in their previous world has. You're going to help them. And you ask them questions and give them opportunities to share. How do you want to contribute? How do you want to put your energy into this effort, into this opportunity? And then that empowers them. So you equip them with the language and you empower them with the opportunity to show off what you know and help out your little brother or your big brother if you are the science one and he's the lyric one. You know what I mean? They're all different, and you are the best CEO of this project right now because you know what it feels. And then again, you give yourself grace for the ups and downs of it. You got somebody gets sick. You go on vacation. You got bad weather. You got all kinds of things threatened to come in. Now you know you're not a slave to, well, they said the kids are broken, so there's nothing I can do. Now you know the first little thing, one little thing, what can I do? 3 to 6 weeks. If I put in, I can get somewhere. And every 3 to 6 weeks, you can get somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
And you are. That's the great thing about it, because you've got 6 months in and you've got it. So, Jenna, what if you could share something to any mamas out there that are, you know, in whatever period of this process, because you've seen, you know, all the way through to get the 9-year-old from nothing to speaking and all of that. What would you say to these moms?
That it's a huge blessing to be a mom to a child, right? Every child. It's a huge responsibility and it's a huge gift. And I think I was given the kids I was given for a reason. I think that I was the right mom for them. And I don't take that lightly, and I'm really grateful for it. That you have more and more control over the situation than you think you might. That there are people out there who will tell you about your child who don't know your child. And it takes a lot of spine, backbone, to say, no table of 10 experts, I'm taking my child out of your special needs preschool. No speech therapist, I'm gonna take my child home and I'm just gonna talk to him. Just like my grandmother talked to my mother. that your kids are worth, they have something to say, and they're just dying to tell you. And it's okay how long it takes them, because they remember and they're waiting for you to help them. And all you have to do is help them.
Yeah, you facilitate it, and they will share. They want to.
Yes.
It's not like you're teaching them how to knit or, you know, take out the garbage, which are things that they might like to do, but they don't need it as much as spoken language, right? You know, think about it. You've got 4 boys, hell or high water. They figured out how to move. They're climbing. They got whatever. They can get whatever they need. They got independence. They learned how to communicate with you. You learned how to communicate with them. And then when you just took responsibility or got organized, instead of relying on other people to say, do this, do this, do this, you figured out, what can I do? And that's, I think, the thing that I want to remind other parents. You got these kids because you can do it. You've been given the skills, the gifts, the talents, the abilities to do everything. Doesn't matter if they're physically challenged, if they've got brain disorders, if they've got genetic problems, if they've got whatever. because you didn't even go to the realms to figure out what physiologically might be going. Environmental and mindset challenges were so blocking in your kids that they weren't talking. And because you just overcame those two things, your kids are talking.
Yeah, it took me a long time. It took me stumbling across a special needs podcast for someone to say, you know, you can help your child and your child is not broken. Your child is not broken. Your child is not broken.
And neither are you.
No.
And neither are you. And just because people say your child is broken and we're experts, your child is broken and we know. If you don't feel it in your heart, like I said, the gut feeling one, if it makes you cry, that's release of, you know what I mean? It's important. The whole reason that you're able to share, and thank you so much, Anna, for sharing all this experience with everybody, because I know that they will appreciate. They know they're like you. They're going through what they are. And that's why I've seen thousands and thousands of moms and dads who are in your same situation. And that's the whole reason these resources exist. So,
well, I wish there were millions and millions of people who are watching right now. And, you know, I just want to do everything I can to shout to the rooftops that, you know, you have something that will help people. Like, I can't believe I got 8.5 years into having children with speech delays before someone just, you, through a screen, sat down and told me what I needed to do to help them. And it worked almost immediately after so many gas miles, you know, so many hours and hours, and all the loss of hope that I was given by all of the experts. And it was just a face through the screen who just looked at me and said, Mama, you got this, you can do it. And I'm just really grateful that you were, that you're sharing this message with parents.
That was perfect. You're making me
cry. No, water.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you all on the Waves of Communication platform. Bye for now. Thanks for tuning in today. With a whole range of Waves of Communication resources, from free content to customized coaching, you now have access to everything you need to elevate spoken language to infinite success. You are welcome to get your journey started with my 11-week language facilitation Journey to Speech workbook. This tool is helping parents worldwide create nonstop language facilitation opportunities that elevate spoken language beyond even their own expectations. You can access this workbook and all of the language facilitation resources on my website, wavesofcommunication.com.